Blog Talk Radio.
We walk boldly into Resurrection Sunday, and my prayer and wish for you is that our Father continues to give you much happiness and joy, and of course, good health. But keep in mind, we do a lot to determine our health. He gives us opportunities to have great health, but it's up to us to kind of manufacture the health that we choose to have for ourselves. Never forget that. I'm Mark Elliott. I moved the buttons here at One Black Man Talk, soon to be joined by Mr. Maurice and Mr. Charles, and you know they do their thing strongly. We're going to continue on in this episode of part two of Self-Shadow. We did part one last week. So many good things came out of it. I determined in there we're going to roll into part two. But you haven't done part two before either. Something I thought about it throughout the week. I was like, man, we never done a part two before, I don't think. No, we haven't. But we're going to do a part two today. With that being said, I want to take time out to spotlight someone. Every now and then someone comes across that just stands out further and farther than the average in society. And when it happens, society doesn't know how to handle it. You know, they throw mud and throw stuff at it because they just can't understand it. And sometimes the reason why they can't understand it because it makes them look at themselves and understand that, you know, you ain't good in certain areas. So what we do is we kind of heap on to that person. The person I'm speaking of is Angel Reese. This young lady plays for LSU women's basketball team. I don't want to go through the particulars of what happened and all that stuff, but I'm happy that this young lady was strong enough. Obviously, she's been raised greatly to do what she does and stand there among all the muck in the mindset when I'm unapologetic. You don't understand me. You don't know me. You haven't been around me. But your words basically mean nothing to me. Oh, that right there I love. Because we sometimes believe we have the right to basically go in, analyze, psychoanalyze, and do all this other stuff when we don't. And sometimes we want to make things bigger than what they are. And what's even better about the situation, and this is, you probably didn't even hear about this. I'm willing to bet you didn't hear about this. You spent so much time with all the idiots saying the things they were saying. This young lady has picked up 17 NIL deals since that's happened. 17. Brands are chasing after her. And if she's that bad, she's this, she whatever, she's classless, why do they want to be part of her? Why would Jan Sport want to be part of her? Why would Bose want to be part of her? Why would Coach, Sonic, McDonald's, and Affinity want to be part of her? Based on her winning and how she's handled herself, she's basically just pocketed $390 million. I'm sorry, $100,000, not million. She's on her way, though. And they estimate, you know, in a few months or so, she's going to be at $875,000. So for all y'all to understand, don't get it, bump you. Good morning, Mr. D. Maurice. Your response to Angel Reese. I love her. I love her already, man. Look out, Candace.
I'm really proud of the stance that she took. She really pointed out, and I think a lot of things in society and current events are kind of pointing out the double standard that has always been there. But you know, it's handled a little bit differently now from this generation as far as a racial aspect. So kudos to her. And this is something that you said earlier that people aren't used to. It's because people are used to folks kind of putting the hat in the hand and step and fetch it kind of response to it. And so this young sister said, no, you know, it's not who I am. And if you don't understand it, that's on you. Basically she's saying in a nutshell, we're tired of educating you. You need to educate yourself and step in line to what people of color, how they feel and how they're not going to kowtow to you anymore.
You know why they partly aren't used to it too, D. Maurice? Because a lot of the men that came before her that played sports and had platforms are cowards. Absolute cowards, bro. I was watching, I caught the documentary. I can't even think of his name now, but the brother that basically years ago chose not to stand, played basketball, NBA. Can't think of his name right now. I know one of you could probably get it. Chose not to stand for the anthem. And what was ironic is this went on for 2 months before he got even noticed. And a fat white sports reporter in Denver decided to make it an issue because his fat grandpa and his pa basically fought wars in this country. Let me say something to white people. Let me just put this point right out. Black people build this country. So at the end of the day, I don't care about what your grandfather went through, World War II, World War III, World War V. We built this freaking country. So when you're ready to talk about that, come talk to me. So here's the point I want to make. That brother, when he took the stand, they showed you. Mr. NBA players in the league, yeah, he has a right. No one would put their arm around this brother because they all wanted their brands to make money. And what black men are afraid of is that, guess what, when you take a stand, and you are respected for it, we will make more money. Look what happened to Muhammad Ali when he decided, I'm not going over there and fight Viet Cong. They never called me nigger. Look what happened to him. The country fell in love with him. But these cats are running around with no balls between their legs, happy to moonshine in front of the camera all the time and talk about a damn basketball going in a court or catching a ball and act like they're doing something great. Mr. Charles, we're talking about Angel Reese. Good morning, brother.
Good morning.
Did I lose you, man?
Well,
we're just talking about her in general, man. I was saying how she basically has, from that day forward, she's received 17 NIL deals from various corporations, and she's on her way moving. It's funny how they took they didn't take a bad side to what she was doing. Little small thing that took about 15 seconds, 10 seconds, where everyone else wanted to call her out. And the first lady, I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about, but someone need to get there and change something. But I just wanted to get your response, if you wanted to say something about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy for her receiving the NILs and things like that. She's a hell of a player. What she did was, it depends on what side you sit on. A lot of people had a problem with it. I think it was kind of just basketball. So I didn't have a big deal with it because Caitlin Clark previously had kind of shown up a lot of things and done a lot of things that the behavior you kind of looked at and like, oh, okay, she's very cocky, right? Very above board, over the top. So when it was, changed up on her by Angel Reese, it wasn't received well. Because Angel Reese is just different what she went about it. The platform, like I said, I had no problem with it. My only thing with it mainly is it just kept going on and on. And I'm glad that I think somebody spoke to her about pulling back. Because one of the things I said, and she can do what she wants to because it's social media, and that's a whole different world to me because I'm an older cat, so I don't understand everything. But the thing for me was after a while, and she's pulled back some, is that you won. And to me, that's the biggest thing. I mean, you had to write 48 hours, whatever the hell you want to do, do what you want to do. But the fact that she won, and LSU won the way that they won, kind of destroying the dream scenario that America, even some of the media had, where they wanted the white hero, and I don't say this often, but I'm going to keep it 100, where the white hero with the white picket fence roll off into the sunset, taking down the big bad African-American or dark or people of a different hue. The same thing was tried to portray with Larry Bird back in the day, back in 1979 against Magic Johnson. And they've been trying to treat Larry Bird the same way. They always wanted him to be their hero because he was so great at basketball. But that's how it was. And the thing with Larry Bird is Larry Bird didn't buy into it because Larry Bird said the one thing that pisses white folks off today is the fact that he said, I just want to be great who I am. I understand this is the black man's game. I'll never be the greatest of all time in this game. But I'm okay with that. Basically saying, I just want to be the greatest white player ever. Like he said, there's no white man on the earth could check me. But he knew what was going on. But the point of what Angel Reese is, when you win, you don't have to say anything else. I mean, you can, but you don't have to. And that's what I saw with that. When you win, it just speaks volumes, because that's when you speak, when you win, it's going to be on the record books forever. Forever. And nobody can take that away from her. And I'm happy for her to keep moving forward and getting her just due. Also, too, lastly, I'm glad that somebody spoke to her about the situation about the White House. Do what you got to do. You earn that. The hell with them, what they say. Somebody corrected it. Do what you got to do, because you deserve to be there, not Iowa. And even Caitlin Clark said, we're not going because we don't deserve it.
I love the fact that you brought up Larry Bird, because people, you know, sports aficionados, we forget that point that realistically, back in the day prior to the NBA really kind of rocketing, it took Larry Bird and Magic Johnson to set the NBA landscape on fire. And it was kind of that where, you know, Magic was West Coast, of course, black, and Bird was White Coast and East. And you brought that together. Hey, man, the fans came out. Prior to then, a lot of NBA games were shown on, what, simulcast at after 11 o'clock, after your, I'm sorry, 11:30, after your weekly or your daily newscast. So, yeah, I mean, we sometimes, again, we throw stuff at it and we want to make it out to be a bad thing. And necessarily, look what comes from it. The growth that came from Bird and Magic Johnson, and the growth for this young lady. And like you said as well, I'm glad she realized that she won. You won at the end of the day. And she won even after the game. And that I applaud. Gentlemen, we're going to go back into, again, our self-shadow. We're going to sneak back into that. But before I do, man, this hit me for a couple of days out the week, bro. And I was going to call you, Mr. Charles, and tell you this. And I said, no, I'm going to wait till we get back together on Sunday, man, because, you know, you were speaking of the book that you're going to put together. And I guess over a month, over a period of time, you have had some hesitation and you've been pulling back, or the case may be. And, you know, I asked you last week, would you think about what people were going to say about it? But, you know, for some reason, man, Monday, it kept hitting me that you're a walking miracle, bro, when I think about it. And I'm going to say I never thought this before. When you think about your story, you know, the way that you were raised with your mother, you know, at what happened at birth with you, where your father took you in, and I don't want to speak too much of it because it's in your book, but the things that you went through that you even basically talked about on this show, and I'm sure you haven't given all on this show, bro, come on. To me, you're a walking miracle, because a lot of times we look for miracles to be, you know, God comes down and takes a wind and move it away from people, and it, you know, doesn't turn into a tornado. Oh, it's a miracle. No. He does miracles every day that we miss. Just because it's not in a sense where it's so like a Star Wars type of thing, we may not contribute it to being a miracle. But when I look at how you got here and the man that you are, bro, that's nothing short of a miracle. Well, basically, to me, he has carried you to here, and I'm glad that he's carried you to this show where we can hear you and hear you relate and tell your story and basically tell your personality, your persona, your views on things. Man, I love it. So I wanted to make sure, and that would have been a lot to call you and tell you anyway, but I wanted to make sure I only tell you, I want to tell everybody, bro, that in my eyes, and I'm sure in others, man, when that book comes out, a lot going to feel the same way. So hopefully this helps you along the way and realize, you know, go get it done, bro, because you don't know who's going to pick up that book or listen to the audio book and go, man, that might be in your same situation and just can relate. And if we can always help anyone, any form of fashion, damn it, that's what we're here for. I'll give you a chance to respond if you want to, sir.
Well, I appreciate that, man. Coming from you, you know, I mean, I appreciate that. We, like I said, I never met you. You never met me. We are family. We go at each other, but that's okay. You know what? It's one of those things that, you know, we in the bunker together, you know, but as long as we practicing, well, I'm going to go hard, you're going to go hard, but you always, you know, stay connected because you know that's your people. So I appreciate that. Demon Reese knows, because we talk about a lot of stuff, I have to talk about it. I never really speak about stuff like that because of the fact of that I just kind of feel this is my journey. I have been totally blessed, man. I mean, because like you said, the point of not understanding what somebody goes through and I don't compare myself to other people, because your plight is your plight. You go through what you do, and you experience what you experience. But when I do look back on it, and you know, through the urging of so many people, including DeMaurice and others, I thought it was important to try to tell the story. But it has been rough, bro, at times. I ain't going to lie, it was rough. And it is a miracle to me, because I know myself, and I think that's what people miss. And they don't understand. I know who I am. I know who I was. I know where I started. I know through all of the things I went through that I could not do this by myself. I learned, I matured, things happened in life in advance, but I cannot do it by myself. That's why I know I have a passion for I know there's a higher being, there's a Lord, there's a God, whatever you want to call it, in my life. And this is not for nobody else, not to be preaching to anybody else, but I know by myself where I started, I wasn't capable of doing that all that by myself, making it to this point. And I also know that there's not that much damn luck in the world, bro. and I'm a gambler at times. Ain't that much more luck in the world, bro. Ain't that many coincidences in the world. So you can go through all your logics and, you know, you have a dissertation about whatever, write about dissertation, but there's not this much damn luck in the world. And I'm thankful for that. So, yeah, I want to finish it, bro. I have to. I'm compelled to. I think I have had lows and moments. I appreciate your words. They mean a lot. Yeah, we're going to finish it. I have to, because, one, it does not, as much as it can help other people, it does not represent just me. The one thing a good friend of mine told me, and I get off this lastly, is I'm speaking for the voiceless. Like a guy like my dad, who did so many remarkable things, not because, I mean, he was expected to, not because he had to, because he just did, and he never talked about it. He just did it, because that's who he was. And not just my dad, but so many other great men and women in our culture and our lives, from grandmothers to whoever, did great things because they were supposed to. That's what they just did, and they don't talk about it. So my book is going to be an example of that, to speak for those that never would say a word. They just did what they needed to do.
Like I said, man, when you get out, just make sure you sign my free copy. That's all I'm looking forward to, my brother. Make sure my copy is free and it's fine.
All right. See what I'm saying? See my reason? Some things never change, but it's all good, bro. Yeah. It's all love.
Oh. Free.
Oh, I'll be happy to buy many copies, boy. I have many copies. Man, as we move back into our stuff, Shadows, there's some things about it that we didn't get to last episode. I wanted to kind of venture into here. And, you know, my thinking, it has to play a part of our relationships that we have encountered and been in. And maybe to the extent that we didn't understand it, but I wonder sometimes, you know, our self-shadow, you know, could have brought us some anxiety, some frustration, anger, bitterness. And is it possible, you know, being that, it stays in our shadow, that had an impact on some of our past relationships once we move past relationships that brought us those particular things, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, I mean, you know, our experiences kind of just shape us. I mean, and whether we realize it or not, you know, some of the things, some of the past traumas, yeah, they shape us. They either help us become a more constructive person and reflect and try to learn from it, or a destructive person where we lash out at people because of our experiences. And instead of turning negative experiences into positive experiences, you talk about Brother Charles there, who could have turned the other way on a lot of different experiences that he, I had a chance to read the book. So I kind of know a lot of what he's putting into the book, but even when I was reading and reviewing the book and you know, trying to help him out in this process, I didn't know a lot of things. That, you know, I just sat back and like, you know, who is this man? Who is this dude? And so some of his experiences and how he was able to reflect on that. And I know we've had conversations where, and I almost feel through the conversations, he's discovered some things that, you know, he had to sit back and go, okay, this is why I do X, Y, and Z. And what I saw is also the parallel between him, with him and his father. And his father was almost like he knew what he needed and was providing that all along. So when, you know, his father's journey ended, his son's journey, he kind of knew the path. He kind of knew exactly what to do, how to step after that. So, yeah, definitely our journeys really have an impact on us, whether we realize it or not. I think some people, the experiences are too painful to look back at and learn from. And, you know, I understand, you know, they have some trauma that you don't want to remember some things. But those who choose to do it and really kind of learn from it and try to step forward, not only helping them themselves, but they're helping other people around them when they share their stories and share their experiences. So I always felt like I always share my experiences so people don't have to fall through potholes. And learning from me, and I like to learn from others. Sorry, I'm getting a little long with it on this, but yeah, definitely, man. Traumas and experiences shape us as who we are, and I like to look at it too as it helps us purpose. Because sometimes we don't all understand our purpose in life, and sometimes we think our purposes are huge, when it could be somebody who is going to make a big mistake or going to, their life is going to turn to the worst. We may be the person that steps in to give them another perspective to help them on their purpose. So, yeah, totally agree with that statement.
It's interesting because I want to take this to a different avenue. You know, I hear stories where locally sometimes and nationally where you see a man act out of anger and frustration. Let's say he's been with a woman and things don't work out. She may move on. He comes back. There's a situation here not too long ago where a guy went to the woman's house with an axe, you know, hit the new boyfriend with it, beat her up some, and now he's arrested. And, I'm looking at that, and for me, and there's many situations like that where it don't even end like that, it ends even worse. And for me, I'm looking at that and going, as men, you know, we have to find within ourselves a way to move on and not make it so final where someone has to lose their life, someone has to be hurt physically to where we can't accept. And here again, that's the anger, the frustration, all of that. I saw a story recently where this gentleman, his wife was poisoning him. Literally poisoning. He was drinking tea in the morning. One day he went to go drink a cup of tea, and he felt ill. And you know the tea smelled kind of funny, and he felt ill. Well, what he did at that point, he had the tea analyzed. And it came back to that the tea had basically liquid stuff that you use to clean your sinks out with, liquid plumber, whatever. Now, at that point, he could have basically came back home and physically got into an altercation with her. But what he did is he set a camera up in the kitchen. And for the next 3 months, the camera recorded her holding a red jug of a liquid Drano pointed into his tea. And I said to myself, for 90 days or more, this man basically knew his wife was trying to kill him. But he kept that inside, he dealt with it, and he didn't allow himself to basically act out on frustration, anger, bitterness. And to me, that inner discipline, and he basically served her up to the DA, and she's on her way going to jail, she's been arrested, she's been charged. But that's what I'm speaking of, because a lot of times we find ourselves in situations you know, because this stuff lies into our self-shadow, and something happens, and we're triggered. And I guess that's where I want to go with this, is Mr. Charles, in the sense that, you know, even, you know, have we been, I'm sure we're all guilty of this, but to me it's not necessarily talking about how we've been triggered, but understanding it and realizing that we should be better, because we always have to put ourselves in a better position than the position that we just came from. And my thing is, don't allow someone or certain things take you out of who you are as a man, the greatness that you are, that you have, you possess as a man. Because there are spirits out there that's going to work against you, your greatness, to pull you into it. And again, this man knew he had the evidence in his hand that she's trying to kill me. So what am I going to do with this? I'm going to basically show my evidence and work it this way. Now, I'm going to commend him, because that took a lot. But I want to come back to you, Mr. Charles, and since we're, I guess the same question, I'm going to move the question on, if you don't mind, in a sense to where, you know, things that are, if you evaluate yourself in a sense, has there been some things from one relationship that may have triggered you in another relationship?
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. And I commend that gentleman that you mentioned about that was getting poisoned. Because the affairs of the heart are one thing, but when somebody's trying to kill you, bruh, he better than me. And I'm just going to say that the pyromaniac in me is going to say that her ass would have been on fire once I found her. Anyway, that's another story. In my mind, she'd have been set on fire, dog. Keep it at 100 with me. But God is good, and he protects us every day. I'm just going to say that. Her ass would have been on fire. And when you knew it for that long, and you still held your tongue, and you still went on like nothing was happening? Nah, bro, that would have been a tough one for me. I had to remove myself. But, no, getting back to the point is that, yeah, I've had issues with some things that carried over. One, because affairs of their heart are hard, man. They are hard. You know, I understand, and I applaud you for mentioning about being men and standing up and not getting caught up in it, but, bruh, when somebody break your heart and you gave them all you had and they just start walking on your heart, man, and you're crying and you're boo-hooing and you gave all you had and it still wasn't good enough, bro. For any person, man, woman, what have you, that can be devastating. And it takes a lot of healing and whatnot to do that. But it's tough. And once you get out, you don't want to repeat the same thing. But it happens. It happens because we are vulnerable creatures. We want to be loved, and sometimes like that's like Superman loving kryptonite. We know it's bad as hell for him; it can kill him. We are like that. I know several instances, but the point of it is, it happens. But you're right; we do have to try to conquer and be better. We have to heal. You know, that's why I think your spiritual comes into play as well. You just got to do things differently, because at the end, I think it comes down to, you know, even in Ephesians, it says you need to protect your heart. You just can't give your heart to anybody. You can even play around, joke around, even have some relationships where you just kind of physical. And I know that's wrong for people to hear, but it is what it is. But you have to protect your heart, because your heart, it covers a lot of things, and it affects you in so many different ways. But you got to protect your heart. You almost have to put a cage in with a key, several keys, to protect your heart.
Good points, Mr. Charles. I want to ask, you know, just in the heart alone, you know, I think in life all our hearts are going to be broken at one time or another. I think that's just a part of life. But one question I want to ask is that, because I'm curious, when a heart is broken, should we take responsibility for the role we played in our heart getting broken? Sometimes we allow others to break our hearts. So should we be, you know, man enough and understand that we played a role in that happening? The question to you, sir.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I know I didn't speak for myself. It takes a while to understand that, right? Because people only do what you let them do, right? But when you first deal with this and come out of it, that's very difficult. All you can do is look at the person. Why did they do me like this? Why did this happen? I'm a good person. You go into all of that the soliloquy of, and I don't know why. I just talked to a cousin yesterday about something similar. Oh, after 10 years, this is what happened to me. He should have been with me, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but end of the day, people only do what you let them do. So you had to tell yourself, man, that was, why didn't I see that again? Why didn't I see that? Why didn't I see that? There were so many signs. Yet I still let it continue. I could have stopped it. You almost had to step outside yourself and look at the situation and analyze it as a general person. And then you go, damn, how many times does it take for Lucy to pull a football knowing she ain't going to let me kick it? Charlie Brown. I'll never get over that. Anyway, I'll never get over that. But it's so true. Every day, come on, Charlie Brown. I got you. I know you. This is, you're going to get it today. Every damn time she pull a football. Sometimes you're absolutely right. We do have to take responsibility for what we've done in it. But I'll just say it does take time often for us to get to that point if we ever do.
Good stuff there, man. Real good stuff. This is a lot coming at you, Mr. DeReese, man, because I knew when you was married, I had the opportunity to meet your wife. So I could only imagine, man, if she was pouring stuff in your Starbucks, you came across it. I could only imagine. I mean, Charles, the fire, I can only imagine what would have happened with you. If you want to speak to that, you can. But realistically, the fact of the triggering in the past from one relationship carrying over to the next. And also, you know, the hurt question, too, in a sense where when we're, you know, getting hurt, are we owning responsibility at the role that we played in allowing that to happen? And, you know, are we forgiving ourselves for letting that happen? Your response, sir.
Yeah. I guess I grew up around a lot of different women on both sides of my family, and seeing older women and how they did things behind the scene that, I won't fall for the banana in the tailpipe kind of stuff where, you know, any kind of situation where I was being poisoned or whatever, I was hip to all that kind of stuff. I cooked for myself and made sure I treated it like the club, man. I always had an eye on my drink. So none of that was going to happen. I know, personally, when I'm in a relationship situation, instead of just looking at the person going, oh, that person did this, that, the other, I'm always reflecting on, okay, what am I doing? How am I acting? Sometimes I'm thinking things through as I'm in the relationship and then kind of doing a check, you know, the positives, the negatives. And, you know, if the negatives outweigh the positive, then that's the scorecard for me to say, okay, I need to step away from this. List that I'm putting together in my head saying, okay, can this be worked on or is this something that can't be repaired? And so that's how I kind of evaluate myself and evaluate the whole situation as a whole, looking at the other person, looking at, you know, how they are, getting clues on whether or not they are locked into the relationship or they have checked out long ago, and kind of looking at things as they are instead of how I wish them to be. And I think it takes a lot of experience and then talking to older mentors and adults to get to that point so that you are fully aware of what's happening in a relationship. Because sometimes while the relationship is happening, while the pain is happening, it's hard to step out of that and look at things the way they are, because you're so wound up in emotions and feelings that you tend to lash out on those or act upon those prematurely and make things worse. So what I was blessed to have is seeing examples, having watched those examples and learned from those examples, have been in those situations where I might have not acted in a rational way in the past, but learning from those and going, okay, this is what's happening. You need to take a deep breath. You need to take a step away from it to make some rational decisions, make some good decisions so that you're going to feel some pain, but you can recover a lot faster than other folks who kind of get stuck in their feelings for 20 plus years and are still there, as opposed to, you know, hey, I learned from this situation, I can move on. And I know that in my heart of hearts, I've looked at it from all different levels, and that as for me, I'm going to make the best decision for me, even though it may hurt at first. In the long run, it's going to pay off.
As we kind of, you know, wrap this up with our self-shadow and come to you this, with Mr. Charles with this one, you know, to me, I think it's important that we embrace our self-shadow and learn not to practice non-judgment towards ourselves, because we're going to make mistakes, we're going to do some things, and don't be hard on it, but understand that it's there, and again, to try to benefit from it and learn from it and be stronger and better from it. So if I, you know, I say that, and I believe that's one thing we can get out of our self-shadow. If you agree with that, you can. If not, if you're looking at your self-shadow, what's the one thing that you can take away from there that can be a positive?
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I think you have to learn, because you have to, as I said, you have to know thyself. And you just have to know that the one thing I would take as a positive from my shadow is the fact that it's important to remember that try not to repeat the same mistake, right? Because it's easy to fall into the same pattern. Maybe you're selecting the same type of woman. Maybe you handle the situation, a new relationship, the same way. And you got to know yourself, not get caught up in it. But I think it's important to learn from your mistakes, even though how bad you want to be in love, how transparent you want to be, how lonely you've been, you can't fall into the same trap. When you see the trap, as Demon Reese said, when you see it, you look, oh, man, that looks very enticing. You know, but I see that trap behind it. No matter how bad you want it, you can't grab the apple, bro, because it's going to come back on you. So I think that's one of the main things I would say I learned from my shadow.
Good stuff. Mr. Demon Reese, embracing our self-shadow again, I think we should all do such, but find a way to do it with non-judgment towards oneself. Understand it, learn it, see it, you know, and don't necessarily run from it. But if you agree or disagree or you won't have something to add to, man, we'll hear that and we'll put a wrap on this, sir.
Yeah, I definitely think that we as people, I know I am, we can be very self-critical and hard on ourselves. And so give yourself a break. You know, you're not perfect. And you're human, and you have feelings, and so not being so judgmental on other people and yourself is, I think, a true statement that sometimes we judge ourselves too harshly. And it's kind of really hard based on how what your experience is, because, you know, we didn't come up with that by ourselves. You know, we had parents and family and stuff like that who could be very critical, and that can be instilled in us where we're beating ourselves up in ways that we shouldn't, and stunting our growth, and then we're not even good for ourselves or anybody else that comes along that wants to build a relationship with us.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Some shows that we're going to do in the near future is Is Your Happiness on Layaway? And Should Love Whisper? Those two that we're going to kind of venture into. And at some point, we're going to jump into some emotional scars that we might be carrying. But we'll do that a little further down the road. Mr. Demon Reese, we're going to come to you first for the question that you have for us today, sir.
Yeah, I want to see how you guys feel about this, because I think I might have sent you this video if I thought about it. But it was his brother who was breaking down this scenario with male and female relationships, and he broke it down through the story of Superman, which is basically an Egyptian story that was stolen, but we'll get to that in another show. But he was saying how, you know, you have the character Clark Kent and you have Lois Lane. It's like, here's a guy that's emotionally, you know, open, and he's kind of like that guy that, you know, he's going to be there for you, all this stuff. He's you know, in touch with his feelings, all that stuff, trying to be there for Lois Lane. But Lois Lane doesn't want him. she wants Superman, who's a guy who's attached from his emotion, who dealt with some past trauma, you know, being, you know, a child that, you know, without his parents, without his home, all this other stuff, not emotionally available, all this other stuff. And she's attracted to him. He's exciting. He's all this stuff. He's kind of like the masculine male man. And so what he broke down, he said that, you know, women want that. They want the Superman. But when they get that, they try to turn him into Clark Kent. What are your thoughts on this particular statement?
You know, I it's been said several times. It might have been put on T-shirts. It might have been put on posters. And you could disagree with it. But a lot of times a woman don't know what she wants. She doesn't. And that's why they say she has a prerogative to change her mind, because she really doesn't know what she wants. She may believe she wants one thing, and then when she gets that, then she realizes, no, that's what I really want. So now I'm going to try to fix it over. But at the end of the day, the good majority of them don't know what they want. Hell, half of them don't know who the hell they are, to be honest with you. May not sound appropriate, but how could you know what you want and you don't know who you are? So a lot of that is based on not knowing who you are. And sometimes, you know, men do this too. We want what others want. If she wants it, I want it. And the same thing with guys. If sometimes a man will date a woman thinking that another man, other men, I mean, therefore, you don't know what you want. Your influences are playing a big part of what you think you want. So if you don't know who you are, how do you know what you want? Your reaction, Mr. Charles.
Yeah, when I saw that, I was like, that damn D. Maurice, he always coming up with this stuff. Because it's so real. It's so real. And what I mean by that is, excuse me, the fact is that we actually that old term, good guys finish last. As you mentioned, Superman is always seen as basically emotionally unavailable. He's always elusive. So she enjoys the time she has with him, because all of this has transpired in his life and what he's overcome, and he's still standing. Not only is he's standing strong. He's a superhero, right? It's like he can take on the world. She's like, oh, man, he's elusive. But when you're a man that tries to be there, try to give her everything that she needs, she don't want that because it's too convenient. It has to have a little edge to it. But then once she gets you as the tough kind of upstanding dude that went through hell in a handbasket, then she want to change you over to Clark Kent. I think that's 100% spot on. So you just got to understand who you are. And as you mentioned, Mark, that sometimes women don't understand what they want. They go back and forth. That's why you as a man have to stand up and understand what's in front of you and how you need to proceed forward and decide what you want first. And if she comes along for the ride, great. But how many times have you, I'll say this in my own personal experience, you did everything you could to try to be right, try to change your, not behavior, at least the way that you are perceived, and you do all this, and then you really find out who the woman is. You go, I did all this shit for that. I could have just been my damn self. Then they've done that. I'm a witness and a cross-carrying member.
Real quick, Mr. Ushua, I come to you. I was thinking of this when I was listening to Mr. Charles, because this is what men do when it comes down to that. We're marry a woman that's not freakish, but we want to make her freakish. Showing that capacity. But we know that going in, but we're afraid to marry the woman that's freakish because we think she's been freaky with everyone else. So in a sense, though, we're messing with the freakish one. But then when it comes down to settling down, we're going to go find someone you don't think they've been touched. She's not freaky. But we want her to be that. Something to think about. But your reaction, sir?
That's a good point. We need to do a video of rebuttal of that. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I don't know where these brothers came from. I have to go back to the videotape to give them their credit. But it was spot on. And you can see one brother talking about it and breaking down the theory, and the other brother like looking at what we are thinking, our minds blown, like, whoa, it was right in front of our face. And this is kind of a scenario that we've seen all the time. The women kind of go for the bad boys, the guys that aren't emotional available, that are standing on their own and have accomplished certain things in their lives and built themselves the way they are that you are attracted to, but that's not what you really, you say that's what you want, but that's not what you really want. You're offered what you really need, but you don't want that. And you're trying to turn this man into something that he's not in order to get what you want out of the relationship. And that's always going to backfire.
Yeah, that is true. Mr. Charles, your question, sir.
Yeah, my question is a little different. We all have grown up differently, and you mentioned about my book and stuff like that, too. Have you ever had the opportunity to assess where you're at now and look back on your life and maybe see some of the things that you were missing or that you have not experienced or whatever, and how that might affect your life and what you can do to repair it? I know that's a lot, but has there been anything that you look back in your life and like, damn, this should have happened and somebody should have done this for me, and I have a void, but I understand that void, but now I want to work on it myself to repair and provide what I need to finish through with my and fulfill my life?
Oh, absolutely, man. I was younger. I've had that and had those thoughts and did those type of things because, and what I realized is that, you know, even if you have your parents or whoever is around you as your support and your guardians, they're going to do but so much. And one thing I've noticed is with, you know, society, people get to a certain age and they realize, okay, I'm not XYZ. Then they go back and blame someone. No, you still could do what you need to do. Now, once you're aware of it, go do what you need to do. I mean, because they didn't have the capacity at that time, how could you blame them? You know, sometimes people do, your parents or whoever you were around you did the best they can do. So, there were some things that I felt like, yeah, I needed to strengthen myself on, and I took the initiative just to go on and do it. And I was grateful for what they gave. You know, they gave more than enough, and I went on. And basically, yeah. So, you know, and it's funny, I can't think of anything now, but I remember thinking that and doing that when I was younger. But, yeah, without a doubt, man, we're going to have those. All I say is that tend to it. Don't be aware of it and do nothing about it. And now make that a crutch and make it an excuse for something that you're not doing because, And I see people do that. Well, you know, I wasn't given this. No one told me. It doesn't matter at this point. If you acknowledge it, you know it, do better. Don't just live in it and act like, okay, just because that didn't happen, do you have a right to be a certain way? No, you should know better, do better. So, again, sometimes our parents, you know, they did the best they could at the time they was doing it. But once you're of age and you see some things, man, hit it and hit it hard. You're responsible, Mr. DeMaurice.
Yeah, one of the things that we're really blessed with and we should be thankful and grateful for in this life is that what our grandparents and great-grandparents didn't know, we have the knowledge now that we can, okay, they didn't do that, you know, correctly, or they didn't know about this, and so I can do it better and be better watching them and then getting new knowledge about things and then moving forward. So I tend to, when I see things like that within my own life, I go, okay, I need to learn more about this. And then I try to surround myself with people who can help me, you know, grow in that particular aspect, whatever it is, to move forward and be better at that. But, yeah, there are always going to be some things that, you know, our parents and our family and our experiences didn't give us that we have to really kind of do a self-assessment and realize that we didn't get, and that we could still obtain those things, and we can – you know, get the help we need, or we could learn about it. We can be honest with friends and relationships that we have, that people who did give it to help us kind of navigate our way to fill that void that we feel that might be there, and instead of just wallowing and you know, in negativity, but saying, you know what? It's never too late to learn it. It's never too late to grow from this. It's never too late to, you know, fill that void that was left there through the experiences we had or didn't have in our past. So I think that's very key, self-realization of, you know, what we're missing and what we need to be a better person and be a better person every day.
I came across one, Mr. Charles, as Mr. Demetrius was speaking, and they didn't really teach me the value of money. It's not that they said go out and spend like crazy, but they didn't teach me the value. That's something that I realized, and I took upon myself, that for me, money should make you more money. Your money should work for you. You work to get the money. But once you have the money, your money should work for you, as opposed to you working the money and just kind of, well, you know, doing some things with it. And that's something that, you know, when I was younger, I look back and say, well, they didn't show me that. Okay. Again, they didn't maybe understood that factor either. But now I know this, what am I going to do? I'm not going to spend the rest of my days acting like I'm ignorant to the fact. No, money should basically work for you some form of fashion, in a sense, to bring you what you need, but at the same time work for you in a sense where you, your work become easier and less. A good question, though, Mr. Charles. Your response, sir?
Yeah, no, I agree with you guys that you have to understand where you've been and what you're coming from and how that reflects on where you're going. So from that standpoint, I had to learn it the hard way because I went through some things, and particularly with affairs of the heart. You know, my dad used to always tell me about women and certain things, but I was like, you'll get it. He never gave me the full thing. He was like, hey, you know who your daddy is. I this is how I operate. And I go, yeah, all right, cool. But what about this, Dad? He didn't give me that. He's like, you smart enough. I taught you everything else. You figure that stuff out after I gave you a little taste of the finishing. But you got to finish the recipe on your own, right? So, yeah, that fears of the heart thing is tough because am I too hard? Am I too soft? Am I going to be taken advantage of? Do I really need to give this another chance? And then after a while, I was like, you'll figure this out quick because if you don't, you're going to be in a world of trouble. So I agree with that 100%, but being able to move forward, taking what you know, learn from it, and being better.
I'm going to tell you something, man. Yeah, my pops ain't say too much of me about fears of heart either. So we're in the same pool when it comes down to that, man. I don't know about Mr. DeReese, but or they would ask if you had a girlfriend. And I'm like, Dad, you should have told me it was going to be like this. You know, now I see my dad and my mom, but he ain't never set me aside and say, you know, woman of this, woman of that, woman going to get on your nerves. Those are things, Pop, you're right, you know, should have kind of clued you in, you know, those type of things. And a lot of it, man, was basically as experience, you know, you do something like, well, I ain't doing that again no more. But, yeah, man, it's true. It would have been good if they would have basically kind of said to us, yeah, other than learn on yourself. But I didn't even get that from my dad. I was like, he didn't really kind of speak. And I remember one time, but it was some times I thought about it because I had a child early on in life. And I'm not saying if he'd have said something, it may not have happened. But I know when my son, when it came down to birth control, I had a conversation with that early with him and about having kids early. Now, for my father, that conversation never happened. I mean, never said, hey, Mark, you know, protect yourself. You don't want, never happened. So when my daughter came, you know, he ain't saying nothing about it. But maybe if that talk was there, who knows? I mean, I probably been hard-headed not listening anyway, but he didn't venture into that. And he didn't say anything on those levels, which to me, as a father, that you need to say. You need to basically, to me, afford your child with the information and let them choose their own options at that point. But no, he didn't. Something you want to respond to, Mr. DeMaurice?
Oh, no, I think you guys wrapped it up. I remember my dad, it's a funny story because I was talking about this with some students and how our parents kind of prepare us for or not prepare us for stuff. So I remember, you know, our dads didn't have those conversations with us. But I was going to my eighth grade prom, you know, and we did have little proms in eighth grade. And my dad was dropping me off at the school. And my dad pulled out a condom. And he said, you know what this is? I said, yeah. He said, you know how to use it? I said, yeah. He said, okay, that's it. See you later. See you later tonight. That was it. That was the end of the sex talk right there.
That was the end of it.
Oh,
be all right. You all right. You good.
You be all right. All right, boy. You're going to dance, you know. So, at the time, I really didn't know how to use it. There was no training programs, you know. You just put it in your wallet and you just had it. I think I did a much better job with my son in telling him about the birds and the bees than my pop. But God love him, man. He said that. I remember that like it was today. He's like, don't do this? Know how to use it? All right, there you go.
Look, you good. You right. You good, right? Yeah, we're good.
And he only gave you one. That's all he gave you.
Yeah, only gave you one.
Hey, be careful with that, boy. Be careful with that. Be careful. I use that.
Oh, man. Yeah, we can't. It's funny. That's hilarious. But, yeah, this thing, they just kind of took for granted. We would just fall into, man. We'd fall in and know. They didn't have to communicate about it. They felt good about it. We got time for one more quick question. I'll come back to you, Ms. DeMaurice, for a quick one.
Oh, no, man. I know Tiger Woods, there's a Masters going on this weekend, and some buddies of mine were talking about, oh, man, it's good, he's going to make the cut and all this stuff, and I'm like, I saw last night when they were showing highlights, man, the pain on this dude's face, and I kept telling those guys Thursday night, I said, man, he just can't do it anymore, and when do you face up to reality when, you know, something you love and you have passion for, you've been doing all your life, when do you kind of come to realization that, you know what, I can't do it on the same level. Maybe I can do it somewhere else, but not on the same level that I thought I could do it.
I think that's, to me, I think Tiger Woods is super selfish. Just my opinion. I think he really is. But he could be doing something else and helping other people. You know, why not help some younger kids play golf, learn golf, whatever the case may be. But it's an old saying. I should always say to myself, you got to know when to leave the party. The music still could be playing. That don't mean you have to be there. You got to know when it's time for you to get up, leave the party and go elsewhere, go home. And it's obvious to me, and I said this years ago, Tiger Woods has no idea when to leave the party. Your response, Mr. Charles?
Yeah, real quick. The media, do me a favor. Okay, he doesn't have any more bullets in the gun, bro. He's going to come to the party, still hanging out at the party. He's done. When a man shot, people that know about golf, he's plus nine, bro. He's not rising from the dead. He's not coming out doing this other stuff. It's simple. If you go invite him, let him come. And if he does something miraculous, great. If he doesn't, understand who he is. He's an older guy out there playing. It's great to see him there. He's like one of them old dudes like Jack Nicklaus, his past his prime. Find somebody else to dive into. Let him be and let him go. And Tiger Woods, it's okay to stay home every once in a while.
Could you imagine for a real quick second his self-shadow, Mr. Charles? Could you imagine what's floating in there? Could you just give us that a quick hit?
Yeah, I can a little bit because you can tell, I think, because of the way that he can't leave it. He can't let go. Excuse me. And you think about all of the issues he's been through from the pain medicines and the things that he never wanted anybody to see, his demons or whatever, I think, are coming to roost, and he hates that because he can no longer control it with his play.